This is The Huddle.
This is not just, this is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Presented by DUIHeroes.com.
The Huddle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We have a two-hour preview show for Week 2, Seahawks versus Titans. It's also Seattle's home opener. Let me, before I jump into a preview, hello Dave, hello Jake, I have to give you guys a little bit of information since it is the home opener and fans are coming back to Lumen Field. Very exciting. There are some rules, so I'll be repeating these throughout the show so you guys can remember, but there are different rules for vaccinated and unvaccinated fans. Vaccinated fans who are going to the game, listen up. You're going to need a hard copy of your CDC vaccination card. You can have also a photo of your card or a digital version displayed on your phone or a printout version, whatever. You need to have your vaccine card in some form. You can also upload your vaccine card to the Clear Health Pass. I have the Clear app. It's really easy. That's what I do. So you can visit clearme.com/healthpass for instructions on how to get all of that set up. For unvaccinated fans, you must take a COVID-19 test with 72 hours prior to kickoff. So Sunday's game, as a reminder, is 1:25 p.m. Thursday before kickoff or something like that would be when you do that. You can display a printed out copy of the negative test, or you can have like a digital result on your phone. And the test can be a PCR or rapid test as long as it's verified by a lab. So again, a lot of information there, a lot of info. And I know it's a lot, but I'll be repeating it to you guys so that you have it. By the way, if you're bringing kids, any fans under 12, they are not required to have a negative test result, so they're fine. A reminder on masks, fans are required to wear masks at all times, regardless of vaccination status. All right, that's a mouthful, and now let's jump into the preview for Week 2. It's going to be the Titans at Lumen Field against the Seahawks. Wyman, I'll start with you. The Titans opened as probably a favorite in the AFC to certainly be a contender, to certainly win their division, and they were throttled in all three phases by the Cardinals.
Yeah, they weren't ready. And we talked to some people back in Tennessee, and you know, one of the things was their offensive line. Taylor Lewan was the left tackle. He didn't play because 11 months ago he had an ACL. And so they had to have Quisenberry play the left tackle, who is typically the right tackle. And so they didn't have that continuity. They also had a couple of their offensive linemen that had COVID issues, so they weren't able to practice and, you know, get ready the way that they normally would. And then they just got punched in the mouth by the Arizona Cardinals. The very first play of the game, Chandler Jones jumps inside of Taylor Lewan and tackles Derrick Henry for a 3-yard loss. And he had 9 carries for 8 yards in the first half, Derrick Henry. This is a guy who ran for 2,000 yards last year, one of 8 people in the NFL history to run for over 2,000 yards. And, you know, in the second half, I think he ended up with 58 because he had around 50 yards in the second half on 8 carries. But, yeah, it was just – I talked to somebody back in Tennessee, and they go, hey, thanks for taking care of the Colts. And I said, hey, I wish you could have returned the favor. Because Arizona getting off to, you know, I didn't know how to feel about that game because you're thinking, well, the Titans are tough and they're coming in here. They're obviously struggling, but I didn't like seeing Arizona have that much success there. But we'll get to them later down the road.
Yes,
but
we will.
I still think, you know, look, I think a lot of people will say, kind of over-exaggerate the, oh, they're going to be angry. And, you know, I would say, well, I was always angry. So, I mean, I don't know that that matters. I think you'd rather play a team that's coming off a bad performance than a really good one. But, you know, this is a team that's physical, and it starts from the top down. Their coach, Vrabel, the guys I talked to back there said Mike Vrabel had to be bleeped like 5 times in his press conference because he wasn't happy. So, yeah, I think they're probably going to be ready to roll. And, you know, I think that they got Derrick Henry. They got our version of DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown. And they got Julio Jones, who's good for about 95 yards a game in his career as far as reception yards go.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough challenge. And this is something that I was really shocked to see with that performance against the Arizona Cardinals, because defensively, I did anticipate them being a weaker unit again like they were the year prior. They didn't make a ton of changes that made me think that, man, this group is definitely better than where they were a year ago. So that was something to keep an eye on. They did bring in Bud Dupree from the Pittsburgh Steelers. He'll be a better pass rusher than what they had, but he was a non-factor really in that game last week. But it does come down to the offense, and so that's why I believe when you look at this game, you know, Dave, you can correct me if you feel differently, but I really feel that this is a huge challenge and task for the Seahawks defense. And if the Seahawks defense can show up and come ready for the challenge, starting with Derrick Henry, which is one of the more difficult tasks in the NFL to shut that guy down, this becomes a very favorable matchup for the Seahawks.
Yeah, and you know, getting over to the offensive side, since you talk defense, I'll talk offense, Jake. I had to get my permission from Jake to do my football one-on-one. I'm like, can I please just have one offensive play?
He asked permission. I'm like, what are you asking me for? Of course.
Well, you're the offensive guru, man.
Nice of you to give him one of four touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean,
very generous.
I said, can I have some? He's like, okay, you can have one.
Fine. I had them, you know, all huddled together. Like, you couldn't, you know, they're precious.
They're mine. Yes. You can take one of Tyler's.
Exactly.
One of Tyler's.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Jake keeps in the film room, football one-on-one. We
That's
got it
right.
covered. So did a little offensive stuff, but I thought offensively, great balance. Like, everybody was happy. They ran the ball. Pete, that makes Pete happy. 27 carries.
Loved it.
Yeah, I love what we saw out of Chris Carson. The other thing was just how Russell distributed the ball. I mean, it's the way you would think it would go, right? Five targets to Metcalf, five targets to Lockett, and then it went 3-3-3 to Everett, Disley, and Carson. One of those got nullified because of a penalty, but there was a 20-yard reception that Everett had that got called back because of an illegal formation. And by the way, I didn't see a ton of that. You know, they didn't cover the end line or the tackle. But, you know, with all the shifting and motioning and everything, five penalties in the first half, but then they corrected it, only two in the second half. So there wasn't, you know, it wasn't a lot of buffoonery as far as, you know, the whole, you know, getting guys off sides and things like that. But I just thought the way they distributed that, Russell never looked like he was in a panic. He never looked like he was distressed. And that's so different from last year. I feel like at the end of the year especially, he just lots of times he didn't know where to go with the ball. He knew exactly where to go. And then a couple times he took off running, which was great. So, yeah, I thought the offense got off to a great start.
We've got so much of the show to continue to preview. Will Disley's going to join us next. Ryan Neal will join us after that. We'll talk with John Boyle, a reporter, about some of these injuries. So, given that so much of the show is going to be about this game in particular, I want to just take like 3 minutes to focus on one aspect of the game that later on in the show we won't talk about as much, which is the return of fans to Lumen Field for the first time in a year. Dave, I know that you were on the call with Rabes for all of these home games, and it was surreal to watch the games with no fans.
The only thing I did like was you could hear the players complaining to the officials.
That was funny.
There was I can't remember, almost an elderly. He was a veteran player.
An elderly player.
For the Cowboys. That you could hear him going, you got to be kidding me, yelling at the official. But yeah, that was cool. You could hear the crack of the pads, but it was just so empty, man. I mean, it was cool hearing the guys all cheer, but, you know, if the fans had been in there on Cam Newton's fourth down stop.
The sack of Kyler Murray against Arizona.
Yep. How about Ryan Neal, who we're going to talk to?
His
interception in the end zone against the Cowboys. I mean, there was a safety against the Cowboys. I mean,
how about this? Jamal Adams hasn't entered a stadium with fans for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's right. Because down in Miami,
he
wasn't there. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were so many things that were great. What about the Minnesota game? A 4th-and-10 completion. Was the touchdown throw a 4th?
Yeah.
Fourth down
as well.
And the Seahawks had stopped them on 3rd and 4th down the series prior to that. So yeah, there were so many great moments that just would have been so loud. I think they would have broken records last year.
It was. And that's what I kept thinking last year as we're reacting and pumped for what we were witnessing in the game. I just thought to myself how much bigger these moments would have been with the fans in the stands and being able to see that interaction. And so I'm super fired up to watch this. I'm super fired up to have the 12s back in Lumen Field and to see a lot of guys who haven't played in front of the 12s. Carlos Dunlap, Jamal Adams. You look at Daryl Taylor, Jordan Brooks. I mean, there's just a lot of guys that have not had that experience defensively. And what that will feel like to them, and having the 12s in there is an advantage, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I just can't wait to see that energy, that enthusiasm, that excitement, between the players and the fans. It's a special relationship.
All right, tight end Will Dissly going to join us next. After that, Ryan Neal will come on with us. Then we've got some injuries to look out for this team. We got a good show for you. It's The Huddle. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
The play fake. Russ half roll to the right side. Fires a shot. Open is Dissly. Down inside the 15-yard line. A roll right. A perfect throw. Dissly wide open between two defenders. A pickup of 22. And Russell Wilson is right on the money. First down, Hawks.
All right, a phenomenal game from Seattle's offense. We'll be joined here in just a couple minutes by Will Dissly. You're listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Yes, we're going to be looking ahead to week two, but also what a start to the season for Seattle on the road against a tough team, and you have a really solid day from the defensive line, from Russell Wilson, from the receivers, from Chris Carson. I mean, that play especially by Will Dissly. Dave, I know you loved that one.
Oh, man. Just slam the guy to the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, Uncle Will, he's such a nice guy, you know?
Yes, he is.
You know, one of the characteristics about him that I love, he's one of the very few athletes, like I ran into him down in Vegas and we were walking through the hotel. He asked me like 50 questions. He's like, oh, so what are you doing? Or what are you doing? What'd you do this offseason? I mean, usually the players.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I love Will. He's a great blocker. I thought also we found out something that maybe was a question mark. Gerald Everett can block. He had a couple of blocks in that game that I was like, okay, this guy can block. That's, I thought, a question because he's a smaller guy. I mean, he's probably a little bit bigger than DK Metcalf, but more of a receiver size and great hands. He catches a touchdown. I know he was frustrated about the 20-yarder he got that got called back, but man, and he caught everything that was thrown to him. And so, plus he can block. So it was really nice to see that. And I think... You know, two of my favorite players are Will Dissly and Chris Carson, where I think if they can just stay healthy and if you just get him the ball, you know, Carson, the formula to me anyway is 18 carries. Get him 18 carries a game, he's going to get you 1,000 yards because that's what his history says. And then Dissly, if he can, you know, he only got 29 targets last year. Mm-hmm. And I know they had Greg Olson and all that, but I felt like if they'd targeted him more, I mean, you throw it to him, he's going to catch it. And he's also kind of a touchdown machine.
Yeah, speaking of the lack of targets overall, the tight ends, I felt, were underutilized as a whole last season.
Totally.
And Jake, I know you've talked about it. Wyman, I know you and Bob have talked about it. I know that it's one game, but it feels already like there's more of an emphasis. I mean, on that touchdown drive for Everett, you had Dissly and Everett involved there.
Yeah, I've told you guys, this offensive system is going to use the tight ends. Why? Because it's in the DNA of where Shane Waldron came from. And it is also in the DNA of this offense to have a more sophisticated short to intermediate pass game. Who does that benefit? That benefits tight ends. Who does that benefit? Dave's guy, Will Dissly. Right? It just, one of the things that really was hard for the tight ends to get involved over the last nine seasons is that this offense was so much of a vertical down the field pass game that it was difficult to get tight ends involved consistently enough. And Dissly is one of those guys that I think can totally dominate the middle intermediate aspect of the field. And when you give him those opportunities, he's going to catch it. Not only is he going to catch it, but he's got sneaky run after catch ability. It's not because of the gracefulness. It's because he's a bulldog out there. When he gets the ball in his hands, as he showed, he just shoves people off him. He bounces off people. He's truly a load to tackle out there. Then you add Gerald Everett, who really is this chess piece that you can move around and utilize him in tight end screens and outside perimeter screens. These two guys present a very unique challenge for defenses if you can get them involved.
Wyman, you've defended, obviously, that part of the field before, and I'm sure you've faced your share of really tough tight ends as well and running backs, and that's kind of the battle I'm sure Seattle hopes to put on other teams with guys like Dissly, guys like Carson. What were, I guess, some of the challenges with the most successful versions of that you saw?
Well, one of the things, like using the running back, for example, you know, you hit him with a check down that's a 4-yard pass that goes through the air. A guy like Carson's going to get you 3-4 at least. And how many times was he stopped or in negative yardage situations? I think I think his shortest run was 3 yards, but it looked like he should have been tackled for a 1 yard loss. He's so good at that. So, you know, I mean, you get a guy like that out in space, he'd much rather start there with like maybe a linebacker or a corner or something than a whole defensive front in front of you,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and you look at the averages, it's always like 7 or 8 yards per catch for him. You know, and it's, you're doing great if you run it 4.5, 5, you know, as far as your average goes running the ball. So that's where I think they're using him. And if they're safe passes, you know, I guess there's no safe passes, totally safe passes, but
some more risk averse
easy
passes.
Yeah, less yeah. risk. It's not like you're throwing it downfield, you know, why not? So I like that. Again, I thought the whole thing, if you look at it, Russ never looked like he was in a panic or in a desperate situation. He always had somewhere to go. So that was, I think the number three receiver as far as attempts is going to either be a tight end or a running back.
Would love to see that. Certainly, you'd hope to see, obviously, D. Eskridge involved more, rookie wide receiver, but would love to see the tight ends involved. Speaking of, Will Dissly joining us right now. I don't want to steal Wyman's question for you, Will, but I have to ask it anyways. He was so pumped, as were fans that were there at the game, Seahawks fans in Tennessee, to see that stiff arm that you gave. I mean, how'd that feel in the moment? Walk us through it.
Yeah, I mean it was a good check down. I mean, we were kind of rolling there in the second half and made a play, got a first down, kept the drive going, and you know it was really just a fun day. You know, it was a lot of highlights from everyone around the offense, and you know, just ready to go this week now. Put some more on tape.
Well, this is Jake. I mean, come on, man, don't downplay that. You were just straight up disrespectful to that defender.
You were mean,
shoving him off the side, and then you see it in slow mo. I don't know if it felt like that to you in the moment, but you kind of stared at him as you saw him go by and then took off. I mean, that was pretty tough, dude. I loved it.
Yeah, no, it's good to be back. I mean, game one, he's kind of, you know, when you're going through the week, you just envision those plays, and then to have it happen, you know, it was kind of fun. I'm not going to lie to you guys.
Well, this, you know, one of the other things that was really fun is to see this offense and to see the multiplicity of it, to see the creativity of it, and to get the tight ends involved. I mean, it was awesome to see. How do you guys feel as a whole coming out of that game?
Oh, we feel great. I mean, you know, Gerald and I came out, you know, healthy, and Tyler Mabry got, you know, his first experience in the NFL. And, you know, as a unit, you know, we just kind of build off each other, and we're all trying to make plays. And, you know, G found the end zone and able to get a couple balls, and then we'll get Tyler a catch here down the road. So, you know, all in all, the offense kind of executed as we wanted to. And we can still get better, no doubt about it. You know, there's definitely some plays we can clean up and be a better offense, which is the scary part. You know, everyone made plays. Everyone was explosive. And, you know, we're just, you know, we're excited to go do it again on Sunday.
Will, I'm going to be really honest with you. Moment of honesty, just between the two of us, is I had my doubts as to whether or not with a new offensive coordinator, a new playbook, you guys would have such a seamless execution of it. And I know that you guys know the things that you want to do better. For fans watching, it seemed pretty smooth from the outside. So, I mean, how do you feel about what this offense can do this year? Did it feel like taking in a whole new playbook, or did it feel like just fixing a few things here and there?
No, I mean, Shane brought a lot of newness. You know, a lot of the old stuff that, you know, we've done really well for a really long time stayed in the playbook, obviously, but Shane just brings a new twist, a new coaching style. He brought Andy along, and him and Mike Solari doing a great job with the run game, and everything kind of marries itself. So we were really excited to get a hold of the playbook, get rolling. You know, fall camp, I think there was some ebbs and flows of the newness and whatnot, but you know, we were really excited. You know, game one on the road against a really good defense who took the ball away a lot last year. So to go out and compete like we did, you know, was a really great start. You know, we're not satisfied. We're going to keep going and keep working for sure.
You know, this, one of the things that was talked about is, you know, I think this was Gerald Everett, you know, post game was saying that, hey, our offense is just getting started. There's a whole lot more, you know, coming your guys' way, just you watch. And that's one thing to hear from you guys who are excited about what you guys can do. But, you know, how much is there? How much more is there in this playbook that you guys just didn't get a chance to show off here in this game against the Colts?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a ton left in the tank, which is the cool part about it. Obviously, I can't tell you over the radio what we have in store for those teams coming down the line, but there's a lot of explosiveness coming. You know, a lot of guys are going to have an opportunity to have breakout games, and, you know, it's kind of just the beauty of our offense. You know, we can just take what the defense gives us, you know, with the playmakers that we have. You know, week to week, it's going to be predicated on what the defense allows us to do and not do, and, you know, at the end of the day, our goal is to win the game. So we're going to go out there, we're going to work with high efficiency and score a lot of points and try and help our team, you know, win that last game.
He is tight end Will Dissly. Will, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck this Sunday.
I appreciate you. Go
get him, Will.
All right, our player interview's not done. Defensive back Ryan Neal going to join us next on The Huddle. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross, getting you guys ready for the Seahawks Week 2 game against the Titans. By the way, that's also it's the home opener for the Seahawks in the first game at Lumen Field as A, Lumen Field, and also B in like more than a year, which is wild. As a reminder, you guys are going to get so sick of me reminding you about this, but I don't want you to get there and forget it. Do not forget your mask. Regardless of whether or not you're vaccinated, you will need your mask in the facility, obviously, except for when you're eating or drinking, but do not forget your mask at all. I'm going to remind you. I'm going to keep being your nagging friend that's reminding you. Guys, when we're looking at this Tennessee Titans offense, I know they didn't have the best outing against the Cardinals defense. Chandler Jones had 5 sacks, which is wild. But they do have a ton of weapons. Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, you have Julio Jones. You have, I mean, a good offensive line, at least pieces of it. They didn't look like it in this past game, but they are good. We're going to be joined by Ryan Neal in just a bit, so I want to talk about the role the safeties are going to have, but let's just expand it to the secondary as a whole. Cornerbacks are a question for this game. They have strength at safety. Jake, I'll start with you for this one. We'll just kind of go back and forth here with like what they need to do in this one. What's the key for specifically the secondary?
The secondary for the Seahawks?
Yeah.
I think that when you're talking about this group, the communication has to be really strong. You have to be on your P's and Q's when it comes to not just A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, but also the play-action game. There were a couple times that I saw in the game, just little examples, and ultimately it didn't hurt them, but you could see that there were moments where Jamal Adams bit too hard on a play action fake, which then puts the corner in a bind in cover 3 because Jamal Adams is supposed to have the flat and DJ Reed is deep over the top and is deep third, but he has to play in between. So those are the little things from a defensive perspective that you have to work within cohesion so that you don't put other guys in stressful situations.
Yeah, I was thinking about the one of the deep crossers. It was the one where Quandre Diggs comes up and just wallops the receiver, almost knocks the ball loose.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so underneath droppers, got to help them out there.
Yeah.
All right, and to help us, I guess, take a look at what the secondary can do in this one and kind of the outlook for the year, speaking to a member of the secondary himself, it's defensive back Ryan Neal. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. We're really excited to see you guys play at home for the home opener. And Ryan, Dave mentioned this, Dave Wyman, and it reminded me, obviously, you didn't have fans at Lumen Field last year, and there were so many moments that fans didn't get to see. And one of them was your interception of Dak Prescott when you guys faced the Cowboys at home. It was such a cool moment for your team. Guys were erupting on the sidelines, but no fans. Are you excited to finally play in front of them?
Man, heck yeah, I'm excited to play in front of them. I mean, my first year when I got here before COVID, I mean, just seeing the magic of, you know, the stadium, the field, the fans all in one was just incredible. Like I always reference the Thursday night game against the Rams, we were wearing all green and it came down to a field goal. And, you know, J-Mott made it, and just hearing that place erupt just kind of stuck with me for a long time. And I was on practice squad at the time, so I just tell guys all the time, like, man, this is going to be, you know, it's going to be fun, man. I just really can't wait to see that energy come back to life and the magic come back. So I'm definitely excited.
Yeah, and Ryan, you know, I think it was like 7 plays. You might be the guy that has the most picks in the least amount of time. Because I want to say it was like the next game against Miami. Was it the first series, maybe, where you got that interception?
Yeah, I think it was the first series, in fact.
Yeah.
The ball, I was like, oh, there go another one.
Yeah, so it was like for a while there, like every 5 or 6 plays, Ryan Neal gets an interception. That's a
man.
You got to keep that up, Ryan.
I'm trying to. Believe that.
Ryan, you guys have a really unique secondary group. I mean, you guys are so incredibly versatile It really is impressive. I mean, you just go down the list of the different things that you guys can do. You yourself, having background being a corner, you're playing safety. I mean, just all you guys. So what has that been like, you know, as a unit, as a group, using that versatility?
I think it's cool because since a lot of guys have that versatility, especially guys like Quandre, who I kind of admire, having played nickel and been a starter at nickel, having played safety, been a starter at the safety positions and a little bit of corner, just guys, really it just comes down to feeding off the knowledge and the education for one another, and then it just puts the picture together for everyone, you know what I mean? The more versatile guys are, everybody can see it from a different perspective, and it really just puts the whole picture together, and I think that's the benefit of having multiple guys who have played multiple positions, you know what I mean? Like, we understand the stresses of the defense, you know, to certain positions, to the corner, to a safety, and so everybody can kind of like understand what they need to do in order for, you know, coverages and defenses to work. And so that's what that uniqueness of the versatility brings out amongst the whole room. You know what I mean? Like I said, everybody has had their fair share at different spots, and then just puts the whole picture together for everyone. So I think that's pretty cool.
Speaking of Quandre, Ryan, does he talk as much trash in person as he does on Twitter? Because he's champ.
He don't stop. He don't stop. It's 24/7. I mean, if Quandre were to get put in the casket, you'll probably hear mumbling from the casket. I mean, he's not going to stop. That's the type of dude he is. So, yeah, he's nonstop trash talker.
What about, so I don't know, I could never do that because I'd get too tired, like in between plays. I'm gasping it, you know, but some guys can just go, and it seems like the same thing with Jamal Adams. I mean, that guy stops.
Oh, never stop. I mean, he goes all four quarters from the beginning to the very, very end. You will hear 33 out there yelling, screaming. I mean, that's just him. He even does it in walkthrough. I mean, you just see he did it today. He's just yelling at people at walkthrough. I'm like, man, this dude is crazy. I mean, both of them, they both crazy. I mean, I guess it's that Texas bloodline or something, but, you know, that's just how they roll, man. That's how they roll.
It's fun to have that energy in there with you guys. But, you know, you yourself – bring a lot of energy, bring a lot of juice, and right now you obviously have shown that you can step in this role and play it extremely well if your number is called, but you are contributing on special teams in a big way for this team. How much pride do you take in that work and that opportunity to get after it on special teams?
Oh, I take a lot of pride in it because, you know, guys like me coming in undrafted, trying to make a roster, that was your gateway. You know what I mean? That's your golden ticket to get into the league. And so for me, it reminds me of all the times that I wish that I could have been a gunner, that I wish that I could have been on kickoff, you know, being a practice squad guy watching games. I'm just like, man, I wish I could do that. You know what I mean? So being able to do it now, I take nothing but pride in it. I'm grateful for it and thankful for it. And I just know, you know, even on special teams, you can make a big play. You can make a game-changing play, blocking punts or causing a fumble or anything. So it's just another opportunity to make something great happen. So I take a lot of pride in special teams, man. It's my bread and butter.
Hey, Ryan, preparing for this team, and you know, a lot of teams are not playing their starters in the preseason, and then, you know, they go out and they have a game that's very uncharacteristic of what, you know, they're about. I mean, obviously A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. How do you go about prepping for this? Are you looking at stuff from last year? Also, early in the season, it's a little bit tougher.
Yeah, definitely. You look at it all, man. You look at the, you know, the last game they played, and you do got to do some homework and dig in the past because that's what teams will do to you. You know what I mean? They try to see what you guys are in and what you've been running, what do you stay true to. And it takes a lot of homework to do that. You know what I mean? You got to dig in all the details and just see inklings that may pop up again. So, you know, early in the season, it is a little bit tougher. You got to go back into last year, the couple of things that they ran late in the season. But, you know, you got the first game to check the film out, and you know, you got to do your homework. You got to do your homework early in the season.
He is Seahawks safety Ryan Neal. Ryan, I know you guys are busy. I know you've got a bunch of stuff to do this season, but can you please join us again in the future? This was such a fun interview.
Oh, absolutely. I'm always down.
Fantastic. Always down. Fantastic.
Awesome.
We need like 30 minutes with you, Ryan.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Hey, I'm with it, man. You let me know. Give me the call. I'll pick up the phone.
You can't wait. Thank you, Ryan.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
He is safety Ryan Neal. All right. I know you guys have a ton of questions for this upcoming matchup, including injury questions. Who's going to be available? Who may not be? So John Boyle, a reporter for Seahawks.com, going to join us next. Don't go anywhere. This is The Huddle.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Fans are returning to the stadium for the first time in a year. It is the Seahawks' home opener, a Week 2 game versus the Tennessee Titans. Before we get started here, I got to remind you guys, first of all, don't forget your mask. Make sure you bring that regardless of vaccination status. And secondly, all attendees age 12 and over will be required to provide proof of COVID-19 vaccination for entry. If you do not have a vaccination card or verification, you can just present a negative COVID test. That result has to be from a test taken 72 hours prior. So if you are going to the game this Sunday, I would recommend going to get tested today. And if you have your vaccination card, you're fine. Just make sure you have a copy of it, digital or otherwise.
Does King County have on their website testing sites?
That is a great question. Yes. Yeah. You know what? During the break, I'll look up websites, and then in the next one, I'll tell you guys where you can go get some of those. All right. Joining us right now to talk about the Seahawks' upcoming game, including a look at where this team stands with injuries, it is John Boyle, reporter for Seahawks.com. Hello, John.
Hi, Stacey. How you doing?
Good. Fantastic. We just had the best interview with Ryan Neal. I had no idea he was so fun. Like, I almost had tears in my eyes. He's so funny.
Well, I'm sorry for your listeners that they go from that to me. But
no.
Hey, he's an entertaining guy.
Yeah, he's wonderful. He's wonderful. So I have to obviously, John, I always do this. I apologize in advance.
You know who I am. What's coming.
Okay, so let's take a look.
I'm going to say the same thing, that we just don't know anything by Wednesday. No, go ahead.
Okay, okay. Well, let's take a look at these injuries. We do know at least that running back Rashad Penny will not make this one, but the fact that they didn't place him on IR so far to me indicates that they maybe think it could take less than 3 weeks. So we'll just start with him. Is that also kind of what you're assuming? And then and secondly, what's the latest with Dee Eskridge?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Penny, I would say that, you know, it's obviously encouraging that they haven't done anything yet. I would maybe withhold some caution until we get through the week, because, you know, if they always decided come Saturday they need that roster spot, there's really no difference between making that move on a Tuesday or a Saturday if they know he's not practicing and playing this week. But, you know, again, it doesn't sound like anything real long term either way. The nice thing with this new IR rule is you can do that, like, for example, Posick. It's not anything super serious, but you can buy that roster spot for a few weeks by putting a guy on IR. Dee Eskridge, we don't know much yet other than that he wasn't here Wednesday, which I would obviously say is not super encouraging. It's tough for anyone to get through the COVID protocol in 1 week. It's more often than not, guys don't do it. The fact that Penny Hart was able to practice yesterday is a good sign, but just kind of the opposite of that, the fact that Eskridge was at home is probably not as encouraging.
Hey, John, I probably could just turn to my left and ask Jake this question, but just from your perspective, Russ seems very happy. So I'm just looking at, like, his interviews and afterwards the postgame. And then Pete kind of got into the act a little bit. Remember in the postgame he said something about Russ was cooking and, oh, I shouldn't have said that and all that good stuff. But it just seems like Russ is very, very happy, very just satisfied with the way things are going with this offense right now.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there's two things at play here. One, he wants to win. This is the most important one. He wants to win. I mean, Jake could talk to this more than I can. He knows Russ a lot better than I do. But this guy wants more than anything to win championships. And so if he is, after being in this camp or being in camp in this offense and now seeing it in the game and liking what he sees, he knows that gives them the best chance to win. And I think he just seems to be very content with the situation here in terms of the guys around him, the system they brought in with Shane Waldron, the relationship with Shane Waldron that we just keep hearing Pete Carroll rave about, that connection those two have. So, yeah, I mean, look, I know things maybe got a little weird this offseason, but it sure seems like everybody's in a great place right now, the quarterback included.
You know, John, one of the other things that was so impressive to watch in this last game against the Indianapolis Colts is the group effort by the defensive line. And it's really cool to see a group that – you've got good talent, but there's not necessarily one individual star that you're looking at and saying, okay, this guy, we're counting on this guy to have 15 sacks this year. Is this something that you see as sustainable for this group? We have all contributors performing at this high of a level?
I really do. I mean, other than, you know, on the offense, we wanted to know what it was going to look like, and it was encouraging. To me, the biggest question, other than what the offense is going to look like, is what's the pass rush like? I mean, you go back to last year, and really the defense, when it turned things around, it's because the pass rush got going. And I think we all knew coming into this year, if they can get after the passer, they're going to be pretty good defense. If they can't, they might struggle a little. So to see that many guys contribute, you know, you go back to the preseason, we were seeing the Alton Robinsons, Rasheem Greens, Daryl Taylor's getting things going. But you always wonder, okay, how much of that is because they're going against backup linemen? You know, what's this going to look like in the regular season? So to come out week one and get that kind of pressure throughout the game from a bunch of guys, that's a really good sign for this defense.
Did you have the feeling leaving training camp, because you were there for all those practices watching these guys before fans got a chance to, did you get the feeling leaving that this group is probably underrated heading into the season?
Yeah, I mean, depends on who you ask, because some people, you know, I've heard people say this is the deepest line since 2013, and people who have been high on this group the whole time, so, you know, they're not underrated in those people's eyes, but there's been a lot of other people coming at it from the, okay, they've got a lot of guys they like, but there is no proven, like Jake was saying, you don't have the 15 sack guy. I mean, Dunlap in his prime was close to that, but sorry, I'm not trying to imply Carlos Dunlap is not in his prime anymore. Don't get mad at me if you hear this, Carlos Dunlap. However, you don't have probably the Chandler Jones type who's going to go get you five sacks in the game, but you've got a whole bunch of guys who can get the job done, and I do think that maybe a lot of people were thinking without the true stud all-pro type, you might not get the production you need.
Yeah, I wonder if Daryl Taylor is that dynamic guy. You know, talk about like a Chandler Jones.
Upside, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if he can be, but I wanted to talk about Rasheem Greene just because I love that kid. I mean, he came in here, he wasn't even 21 years old when he was drafted, and this is his fourth year. It just seems like he's really cutting it loose, and we had him on this week, but, you know, what he did in the preseason was for real. I mean, and he did it on Sunday against a really good offensive line. And, you know, it's not like he's incredibly huge. He's not like super, you know, fast or anything like that. But that guy's just such a good football player. And I think John, like he's kind of upped his game to where, you know, before maybe he gets 3-4 sacks. Now, you know, maybe he gets into the double digits the way he's playing right now.
Yeah, and you know, Pete Carroll's talked about this a little bit this offseason. They moved him a little bit to more of a outside edge role. He was a guy that just kind of the makeup he has physically, he's the kind of guy you can move inside and out. And we did see him line up inside some, but they are letting him get on that edge rush a little more, and he's thriving in that role. And to your point, this looks real. You know, he was one of those guys, like I was saying earlier, you wonder, okay, will this translate? All these guys looked good in the preseason. What's it going to look like? And there's boom right off the bat. He gets sacked early in the game, and he's being kind of a menace all game. So yeah, he's, and to your point too, he's young still. I mean, that's, you forget that a guy, you know, a guy been in the league for a few years, you think he's in his mid-20s, but he, or in his late 20s, but he came in so young, he's, you know, he's got a lot of good football ahead of him still.
John, there's another preseason all-pro that caught a lot of people's attention and was a, you know, a good portion of the talk in town during the preseason, was Alex Collins and how well he was doing. And obviously it's a bummer to have Rashad Penny be out for at least 3 weeks, but you get a chance to see Alex Collins and see if he can be a factor in that rotation with Chris Carson. What do you anticipate from him?
Yeah, you know, I think if he gets his chances, he's going to be good. We saw it throughout the preseason and training camp. And, you know, unfortunately with, you know, just the way the numbers work and special teams, you know, DJ Dallas and Travis Homer are big special teams guys, so that's why they're going to be active ahead of an Alex Collins on game day when everybody's healthy. But I think when, you know, assuming Penny doesn't go this week is what we think is going to happen, Collins jumps into that number two role in terms of the running back touches. And, I would be surprised if he doesn't break off a few good runs just because everything we've seen about him since he got back to this team last year and especially this summer, he's just looked faster, more explosive than the guy who came in here as a rookie.
Is there a player on the Seahawks team that maybe didn't have the biggest test in week one that will have a much bigger challenge in week two?
I mean, I got to point to the cornerbacks. You know, the Colts, they're missing their best guy in T.Y. Hilton, and they're going to lean pretty heavy on that run game. And the Seahawks did a really good job taking care of what they needed to last week, and that defense played really well. But this is a much bigger test for that defense when you've got A.J. Brown and Julio Jones coming in. So I really am excited to see kind of what that looks like for Trey Flowers and D.J. Reed going against, you know, one of the best receiving duos they're going to see all year.
John, you know, one of the things that's popular to say, and I guess I probably said it before, is, oh, the Titans are going to be angry when they come in here. And, you know, I was saying, well, I was always angry. And the other thing is, you'd rather play a team that's coming off a bad performance than a good performance. What's What's been your experience? Because you can't say that this team isn't going to be stung, right? I mean, they're playoff team the last 2 years. Their leader's pretty fiery. You know, what do you expect for the Titans coming in here? How have you approached games like this in the past?
I feel like when you talk about like a high school team, then the emotion can play into it more. I feel like at this level, like, look, teams have bad games. Maybe it's a matchup thing. Maybe it's somebody injured. But I don't think it affects teams from week to week as much at this level when it's their job as it might younger guys in college or high school. I do think they're going to play a lot better just because they're a better team than what they showed. Like, teams in the NFL, if a game gets away from team a little bit, teams are good enough to capitalize, and Arizona did that, and they took it to them really well. But I would be pretty surprised whether it's because they're fired up and mad about last week or just because they execute better and guys play a little better. I do think the Seahawks are going to see a much better version of the Titans.
I totally agree with everything you just said. I mean, you're right. It's like the emotions and all that. That's kind of high school stuff. But, and of course, they're going to play better. You might as well just wrap your mind around that because they're not nearly as bad as they were.
He is John Boyle, reporter for Seahawks.com, also joins us every Thursday on The Huddle. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
All right, fans are going to be back at Lumen Field to curb the spread of COVID-19. And for safety protocols, they are going to have a vaccine and mask policy. As a reminder, make sure to bring your mask. And all attendees 12 and over will be required to provide proof of COVID vaccination for entry. Or you can have a negative COVID test taken 72 hours prior. And Dave, you said you've got a list of locations.
Yeah, well, if you go to King County's website and just type in testing locations. I went last year in Renton. It was a drive-through thing because after the bye week, I wanted to get tested. And, you know, they will text you or email you your results. So if you want to do that, if you go to the King County website, they've got all kinds of different testing sites around the Puget Sound.
Okay, so if you do not have a vaccination card, I would recommend going to get tested today to make sure you get it within that 72-hour window. Again, that website, Dave, just let you know, that's exactly where I would go to look. Okay, coming your way next, there was a big injury on the Seahawks offensive line. Ray Roberts going to tell us what we can expect for this group moving forward.